Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Church of the Masses. This is the show where we look at the intersection of faith and culture. I am a screenwriter. I've been a producer, been an entertainment executive, small places, but still I've done it. I produce theater. And then I'm also a committed Catholic. I was a daughter of St. Paul, which is a community in the church that is dedicated to the media. And I spent 9 years with them praying for people in media. I always say if I knew that I was going to be praying for myself someday, I would have worked harder to stay awake more. But anyway, and then also I'm an educator. I have a doctorate in creative writing, and I am a professor in the cinema school at Regent University in Virginia, starting this year, actually. I've been at Azusa Pacific University for these last 10 years, and now I'm moving cross-country to Virginia. So what we do here is, yeah, we talk about topics of faith to people, topics of interest to people of faith that have to do with culture. So one of the things I want to start out with right away is that this week, August 13th, which actually probably last week, will be the release of Unplanned on DVD. Kind of a big deal, and the movie did very well in the theaters, but now we have the opportunity to really, really get it out there to a lot of people who can watch it in their homes. So it's very, very important that you try to get copies of this movie out to people who either are post-abortive or would be somebody working with young people or someone who may be thinking about abortion. This video, we know this movie is very powerful with people. So they have a really cool thing they're doing right now, which is the people who are behind the movie, Chuck and Carrie, Chuck Konzelman, Carrie Solomon, they wrote the movie, they directed it, and they're producing it. They've come up with a way to help prosper pregnancy centers, pro-life organizations, and pro-life ministries. And so what they want to do is they have a thing they're doing where you can send out email blasts, you can put on your website an ad for the DVD, and every time somebody buys it through your thing, through your URL, then you get 20% of this. And this money will go... they're doing this particularly with pro-life ministries. So if you have a pro-life ministry or a church group, you run a crisis pregnancy center, this is an amazing opportunity to not only share the movie that you know can be life-changing, but also bring some more money into your ministry. So what you have to do is go to their website for it. So if you put unplanned... and they're calling it unplanned. Look for unplanned DVD, but if it's they have a name for it, which I am now I'll get it for you next break. But anyway, unplanned DVD cooperators, Google all that, see if it comes up. But I will give you the exact site when I come back. So anyway, it's a great opportunity. Minimally, you should load up yourself, buy unplanned. Let's get those out there. I also want to mention again, which I mentioned last week, the documentary called Emmanuel, which I think is very timely right now. This is a documentary about the shooting that took place in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's really, it's about how the community came together and decided to forgive. And so it's interesting because that, we didn't hear much after, you know, these things, they go by and you don't hear about them again. Right now we're suffering together under this awful shooting, the double shootings that happened in Dayton and El Paso. This documentary documents a community coming together and deciding to forgive and to pray and to turn this into a moment of unity, this terrible tragedy. So it's a beautiful, powerful piece produced by Viola Davis, who's a very famous and accomplished African-American actress, among others. She's one of the people behind this. But check out Emmanuel, the documentary, and I think you'll thank me for that. Also wanted to mention a couple things that are in the news. So it was announced this week that Disney Channel introducing its first gay teen romance on the series finale of the show for kids called Andy Mac. So if you think your kids are safe watching the Disney Channel, the Disney Channel, you know, we can put that on and just walk out of the room, think again. In fact, more and more shows they've been finding have been putting homosexual agendas into the shows geared towards kids. So that it came out that the show Arthur, I think it's about the little animated rabbit, right? But that show had a gay character introduced for children. And this has been going on. We know, you know, Sesame Street's been flirting with this. They've been flirting with all kinds of things for years. But the Disney Channel is like full bore into this now. So that kids are going to be watching gay characters and have gay romances. And you're talking about actors who are 14, 15, 16 years old in shows that are meant for kids 8 to 12. So very, very pernicious, it seems to me. But I just have to warn you, Disney is not safe anymore. It hasn't been for years, but this is really, really problematic. Another thing that came out in the news this week is that a Google employee, this is a story that just broke today, actually. So a former Google employee is accusing the company of discriminating against pregnant workers. I mean, it kind of makes sense if you think about it. They're such an anti-life progressive culture at Google, as in so much of high-tech Silicon Valley world. But apparently, this woman said that she wrote a 6-page memo, which she posted to an internal company message board last week, which was titled, "I'm not returning to Google after maternity leave, and here's why." She describes alleged incidents of discrimination towards another employee who was a working mother and pregnant, details retaliation she says she faced from her bosses after she also became pregnant, expressed her disappointment with human resources, who she said refused to take any action in her case. So this is interesting because Google is the consummate progressive temple and edifice. And yet, you know, for all of their proclaiming that they support women, it turns out they don't support pregnant women. Once again, we see that there's just a general anti-life thing going on. So this is going to be really interesting to see where the feminists come down on this. You know, like what do they do here? You know, they want to support women, but this is a pregnant woman. And is that going to be, are the feminist movement going to get behind her and rally to her cause? They absolutely should, right? I mean, in fact, we've heard them talking about maternity leave and, family leave, et cetera, is a big feminist issue. This seems to be triangulating them right where they live. Keep an eye. This one is breaking pretty hard. The whole conservative universe is getting involved. And this may be the last straw for Google and Twitter and all these high-tech companies, Facebook. You know, we know that on Capitol Hill, there are policy people who are really getting to the end of their rope of patience with the censorship and the discrimination against conservative views or attacks on Christians, et cetera, coming out of high tech. Senator Hawley from Missouri has been one of the leading voices fighting for conservatives to have their freedom of speech guarded on all of these platforms. You know, people say to me, you don't pay to use Twitter, you don't pay to use Facebook, therefore they can do whatever they want. No, actually, because the internet is free, right? And these companies get to use the internet free, and then we all get to take advantage of their using it free, and that's why it can be free for all of us, and of course their advertising, et cetera. But I just don't think it's as simple as that. These places, everybody thinks when they sign on to them that their First Amendment rights are preserved. And in fact, we're finding that they're not. So anyway, I think that it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens here in this new breaking story. What does the Me Too movement do when a pregnant woman says she's being discriminated against for being pregnant? And by, you know, one of these high-tech giants. Very, very interesting case to follow. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, another thing that has been breaking recently is the case of liturgical worship and, especially arts in the church. We're seeing a new renaissance happening all over, that it seems like we've finally gotten to the end of the ugliness after so many decades of having it thrust upon us in our churches. My next guest is right at the center of that, and we're going to talk to him for a few segments about his work and in bringing beauty back to the church.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God, and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, welcome back. This is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. This is the radio show. It's kind of unique, I think, in all of media. We talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I am both an artist slash writer and a committed Catholic and an educator. So kind of bring together all those things. And so I'd like to spend every episode highlighting the work of somebody who's out there in the church, not cursing the darkness, actually trying to give a gift of culture and beauty to the people of our time and the church of the future. And our guest today is somebody who's doing that. He's absolutely at the center of, hopefully, a new renaissance in sacred art in the church. Please welcome Enzo Salveggi. Hi, Enzo. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, Barbara.
Yes, it's great to have you on our little radio show here. And the reason I invited Enzo was as a little promo to this conference we're going to have on August 17th. Here in Hollywood at the Mears Center at the First Presbyterian Church of Hollywood. It's a 20th anniversary celebration for Act One, which is the ministry I founded in Hollywood to help people make a good start as writers and producers in Hollywood. And so part of our 20th anniversary is we're having kind of what have we learned. And Enzo is going to be talking to my community, alumni, other faculty, et cetera, about religious metaphor and visual imagery. So I said, we should have you on our show. And then, Enzo, I find out that you are going to be renovating or leading up, I guess, the design of the renovation at my parish, which is Our Lady of Grace here in Covina. isn't that funny? A little small world there, but it's that my husband and I attend the Anglican Ordinariate Parish, which is we're not former Anglicans. We're just desperate Catholics in the wasteland that is Los Angeles Archdiocese. So we found this wonderful community and we've been worshiping with them for two or three years now. So anyway, so welcome. So Endo, give my audience a little sense of where you come from and how you and what you do.
So I was born here in the United States, and I grew up in Italy, and then I came back as a child, did up to high school and a little bit of college, and then went back for college in back to Europe. And so I really kind of spent half my life here and half there. And when I came back, there was a transition period of really figuring out what to do. And then I thought, why don't I do what I've always really wanted to do, which was, even since childhood, was to, and at that time I thought it would be as an architect, but as that developed and evolved, it really turns out that I'm there to work with architects and for architects. And so what we do, what I do in particular, is play art director and designer. So if I'm consulting with a firm, then I will help them correct some of the work or introduce some ideas, modify others. That's as a consultancy. And from my own, starting on my own right, I will design pieces and then find artists or artisans, craftsmen that are able to interpret that properly, authentically, and provide the client with a beautiful result. And the goal, obviously, is in liturgical work, is the glory of God and the triumph of the church and the saints. It seemed to be a bad word for 30, 40 years there, but I think that is still an important concept. And in recent days, actually, an interesting issue has come up. I saw Bishop Barron was talking about how I think the figure is 70% of Catholics or people who call themselves Catholics don't believe in the real presence. And we have to wonder, why is that? The bishop brings up catechesis and apologetics as a real issue, but I would also submit that the spaces and the art and the expressions that we've used really in liturgy, in church, in the sacred arts, or lack thereof, has informed our mind, has informed our soul, has informed the way we look at things. And so ultimately, it's also an apostolate. And so the way that my company is called Heritage Liturgical, and I really, it's in all my documentation, it's in my literature, we are a service to the priesthood. And if we are not a service to the priesthood, then ultimately it's just a business, but it's not just a business. There's a definite spiritual component to the art which has to be faithful, which has to be authentic, and ultimately it has to be humble, and the artist has to be humble. And so much as, insofar as he disappears, then that allows the truth to come forward.
No, it's just so many things you said there are so fascinating. And I think that, I could pick up on so many of them. Let's pull back a little bit to your formation. So how much of growing up in Italy among their beautiful, beautiful buildings and churches there formed you for what you're doing now?
Well, it forms you unconsciously, and then you look back and you kind of start figuring out, that's why I believe what I believe. I think most people, we don't question ourselves, and I certainly didn't. Why do I believe the things I believe? Why do I think that's right? Why do I think that's good? Europe, Christian Europe, is a quilt, and at the center of each town is this pin, right? Like a button on a tufted quilt, right? And at the center of that is a church. And what is in that church? It's the best that community had to offer. And whether that's very simple, whether that's very grand, small or large, it forms you, because the whole town, and even to this day, if you're in an older town, you still feel the centering of the entire space, right, that you're living in around that sacred point. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you look back on, and it's really amazing to see how much of that informs you as you grow, and especially if you have an aptitude for it, perhaps even the right people around you that help foster that. It formed me.
Yeah, I'm struck by one of the things I know with my own family. My father used to have us watch classic comedies when we were kids. We're talking Laurel and Hardy and Abbott and Costello and the Keystone Cops. And here, it was ridiculous in one sense, because here we were, like 7 or 8 years old, and all of our friends were talking about Scooby-Doo and we were talking about Laurel and Hardy, But having said that, my father's strategy was, if you expose kids to greatness, then they will lose their taste for banality and ugliness.
Exactly.
And so I think that what you're pointing to is that just being around that stuff gives you a sense of taste you may not even be able to articulate, especially as a young person. But that one of the problems that we have in the church in this country is so much banality everywhere that the kids, our young people, they don't have any, they're not getting a sense of taste refined from the church. In fact, I would say that the art in the church today in most places in this country is among the ugliest, art that you see.
Yeah, what I always tell family, look for the ugliest building in a city, and that's the Catholic Church, that you're supposed to walk into when you just want to run away. Mm-hmm. But Barbara, I want to say something. It's not just the United States. Mm. In Europe, in Italy, in the south of Italy, right, what people consider to be a very, Christian, like a very Catholic, you have some of the most scandalously ugly architecture you could imagine as soon as you step out of the historic centers, especially when you're talking about liturgical space. It is unreal. I'll tell you a small, quick story. Where my grandmother lived, It was on the outskirts of this small little town. The town I grew up was 7,000 people, and she was outside of that. So it was very small, but they eventually built a little church there and created a parish. And the big pride that they talked about when you walked into this building that looked like it was ready to fall apart any minute, was that they had hired the local communist to design this. And isn't that great? Because now we have communists designing our churches. and that was their claim to fame for this building, which incidentally didn't even have an axis and had supporting metal columns right in front of the altar.
Wow.
It was almost like a slap.
I saw that kind of thing in Spain too, now that you mention it. I remember the city center, they have these incredible, historic basilicas. Right. And then you go to where people are really going to mass, if they are, and they're just awful. So, so what happens succinctly in the church that all of a sudden beauty became passé? When I got a tour here in the new cathedral here in L.A., we went to see it, and We stood outside looking at the what my students call Man Hands Mary, which is the statue or supposed to be Our Lady of the Angels. But it's this, if you know what I'm talking about, this androgynous figure that's over the door, and you can't tell if it's a man or a woman, and you can't tell whatever, you know. And the guide said to us that the artist endeavored to put racial characteristics of every different race in this figure, so that everybody would feel welcome. And I said, yes, but it's kind of ugly. And the woman looked at me and her eyes narrowed and she kind of waved with her hand and she said, oh, the church is not into that anymore. And so what happened, Enzo? And then we can continue, you know, we don't want to be just on a downer here, but what happened?
No, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I think different people can point to different things. I mean, I'm born in 79. So by the time I'm even born, a lot of this has already been in motion for decades. Mm-hmm. And I guess I can only talk about the symptoms. The symptoms that I can recognize is that it's not a bottom up situation. It's a top down situation. There was a real willful desire to excise, to cut out, to eviscerate the church out of what was almost politicized from within the church. You know, people talk about politics. There's no politics like church politics.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's 1,000 times more vicious than anything you could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. There was a desire, I think, to modify and change the way that people saw their faith, interacted even with themselves and in relation to others in the context of that faith. And the way to do it, the first way to do that before changing doctrine, you have to change people's environment. You have to change the way they pray. Yeah. If you change the way that they relate to God or that they understand God meeting them, if you change their cosmology, if you change their anthropology, if you change their sacramentology, in other words, if you change the art around them, eventually their ideas will change.
Will change too.
Ultimately, what? Yeah.
So great. You know, that's a great. We'll pick that up in our next segment when we're talking to Enzo Selvaggi. And of the Heritage Liturgical Institute, or Liturgical Heritage, whatever, we'll get that right. This is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're on Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Network. Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. Is going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to, or are called to, as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show. and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome back. This is Church of the Masses, where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture from a Catholic perspective. I am a committed Catholic, and I'm an educator. I'm a professor in the Cinema School at Regent University. And my guest today is Enzo Salveggi. He is the principal at Heritage Liturgical, which sees itself as playing a huge role in helping priests make beautiful decisions, make better decisions. You know, Enzo, I think one of the things that you must have noted in your work so far, and it's something I've noted going around, I get invited to speak to on homiletics to seminaries, is the kind of dearth of aesthetic formation in seminaries. That is, they, you know, I always start out with what is the beautiful with my seminarians, and of course, they can't really tell me, you know. And so you say, wow, who's teaching you guys aesthetics? And then you find out they're really not getting it. Do you think that's like what's going on there? How can we turn that around? And because these are the people who are the gatekeepers for all of the arts. Let's face it, we're not a democracy in the church. We're monarchical. These guys, you know, they're going to have the budgets. Okay, right. But that if they don't know anything about what's good, beautiful, then they end up going with whatever, you know, Doris and Stan, the, you know, the major donors or whoever's the loudest ear. You know, what do you how do we turn that around, that educating our priests in aesthetics?
Well, I think the fundamental question, and again, you know, I'm not a bishop, so I don't run a seminary, what I've noticed is that the priest who, even if he doesn't have a formation, which is, you know, it happens in the arts or in construction or those types of things. I mean, the priest to me that I find among my clients that is open to wanting to do, and that's the question. It's never about really about money. It's not about those things. It's about will, the will to build something beautiful and the desire to do it. But that stems from something even more primordial, which is that God deserves it, and that our response to God must be the best we can do. That ultimately is not an artistic consideration. It's a moral and theological one. Mm-hmm. It's one that stems from a grounding in the faith. And so that's why I say, you know, what I style ourselves as is not just an art company, but as a service to the priesthood, because it's true. The modern priest has been denied his inheritance in large part. Mm-hmm. And part of that isn't just the classics and the language that connects them to the fathers, the study of the ancients and whatnot. It's also the Roman cultural formation, and in large part, unfortunately, the church has ceased to be that organ that transmits that tradition and transmits something that we don't even talk about in America so much as Catholics, is Romanity. How to be Roman and what that actually means. So the beautiful thing, though, is that every young priest that I've met in the country so far has been somebody who's on fire, has been somebody who wants to do the beautiful thing, and they approach us asking us to help them. You know, the priest doesn't have to be the expert in all things. Hopefully he's an expert on the altar and in the confessional for sure.
Right.
but if he has the desire, mm-hmm. if he has the heart and he has the people behind him, which is so important, then we really can. It was never a one-man show. None of what we see built out there is a one-man show. Michelangelo didn't just come up on his own with a theology of his ceiling, for example. Mm-hmm. But neither did the cardinal who perhaps instructed him know how to use a paintbrush in that sense. Uh-huh. So it is a communal effort. It is a beautiful interweaving of all the vocations within the church. But yes, the priest is the leader. But if he has a strong, heartful formation, then he will call on those around him to do the beautiful thing.
Yeah, you know, I just want to... I just want to interject in there, you know, something you said in the first segment about, you know, when I asked you why have we gotten where we are here with so much ugly stuff in the church? And you said, well, you know, they were trying to divest themselves of something that they were associating with all of that stuff. And, you know, I really can, I think I was thinking of a story while you were talking, and it was when I was a young nun, I was a junior and went to St. Louis, and it was the anniversary of our founders' birth. And so he had just been made venerable. And so we were going to, the novices or the juniors, we were the young sisters, we wanted to really put out the fancy vestments and have a, you know, the fancy, you know, all the chalice and everything. And when the priest came in and he was a baby boomer, I said, Father, it's the anniversary of our founder's birth. And so we want to have, you know, big kind of celebration here. And so we've got the incense. And this guy turned on me and he said, it took us 30 years to get rid of all that crap, and now you people want to bring it back? What are you talking about? Right? But I think in his mind, incense was connected to everything that was wrong in the church that needed, you know, kind of renewing at Vatican II. And so that explains, doesn't it, the kind of messianic drive that some of these boomers in the church have had to strip stuff away.
Yeah, and it's easy to point to the council too, but in reading the documents even about beauty, for example, people always say noble simplicity. It never says noble simplicity. It says noble beauty, and that the beauty must be resplendent. So the, you know, immediately perceived and perceivable. So there's a stratification of what the church is, of what she proclaims herself to be, and then of what men, as in people, you know, might want that to actually mean. And those, you know, that last one there, that's the tricky part. You know, there's a, like I said though, if there's a grounding in true understanding of what it is to be Catholic, what it is to be Roman. You know, some people, by the way, Barbara, will say that even talking like this is wrong because it's not about our identity as Catholics. You know, they'll hyphenate it. We're Catholic Christians, as if there's a dichotomy there, as if there's a conflict. Mm-hmm. And so I think the Roman outlook is to not see conflict, but to see unity, and to yes, be sober, and to yes, be clear about things, but that doesn't mean to be sparse or to be anemic or to be ugly. It does mean often to be simple, because that's what the situation calls for. Mm-hmm. But simple doesn't mean bad, and simple doesn't mean ugly. Some of the most beautiful churches, even in a big city like Rome, mm-hmm. with all of its, you know, resplendent temples, some of the most beautiful spaces are actually very simple, ancient, almost barren spaces. But that's because it doesn't matter what the style is. It doesn't matter what the investment was. It matters what the intentionality behind it was and the nature of the space that was created, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I it's, again, so many great points. And I think you're right. One of the things you see on the, say, the more traditional conservative side of the church is the excesses against beauty, or the offenses against beauty, come in this excess of devotion. So even, you know, like a little church that I'm thinking of right now, lovely little community, but they have like every saint in the firmament, you know, in all different styles kind of jammed into the front of the stage, you know, and some of them are tacky, you know, some of them are good, but it's kind of like, you know, we have three different images of Jesus in three different forms in the front of the church, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, pick one, you know, we don't need all the different devotions up there. But so that is a kind of this excessive devotion that's coming from a kind of, it's a reaction against the stripping away. But again,
I get that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get that. But again, truly, Romanity is the solution. It's the solution to the problem, because it's about balance, equilibrium. It's about expressing things in a clear way, And so I just go back to that. That is the key to really fixing the excess on either side, and also fixing the wound, frankly, that comes from, you know, as Catholics, being abused over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, our fathers invested so much into building these beautiful places, and then, you know, within a few years, somebody comes in and decides that that was all trash, right, and literally throws it away.
Yeah,
that's not a Catholic way to behave. It's not how we do church. It's not how we've ever done it. It's a wound.
But I think it's also especially sad, because one of the things about Catholic art has always been that it's a reaching out into the future. It's a gift to the future.
Absolutely.
Not just to our own time. I remember going to the cathedral in Oviedo, outside of Rome. There, it's about an hour, I'm sure you know.
Stunning.
Yeah. So, and it took 600 years to build. And I remember when we had our tour, they said the architect who finished it was a descendant of the architect who had started it. And the family had been doing this for 600 years, you know? And so I remember thinking, if you said anywhere in you know, contemporary church, we're going to start this cathedral and it's going to take 600 years to build, I mean, they would lock you up. But because we don't believe in the future the way they did, you know, they were like, oh, we're adding our gift to the ages that have come past for the future ages. We're giving a gift. It's expression of our faith. I don't think, I think everybody here now is just the moment, you know, and then we'll tear it down and move on. There's no sense of the future. And that's a very sad kind of loss that we don't see. You know, so I say to people all the time about music, which is, I have two musicians, church musicians in my family. And, you know, they always say, what hymn that we're singing right now in most churches will people be singing in 100 years? You know, almost nothing, right. Almost nothing. We're not going to add anything to the patrimony of beautiful music in the church in this couple generations, which is very, very sad and tragic, I think. Huh?
But the beautiful thing, Barbara, is there's a lot of movement, and there is, you know, where there's darkness, even a little bit of light is overwhelming. There's a lot of movement in a beautiful direction.
Can you stay for the third segment, Endo? Because we need to talk a little bit more. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Good. This is Church of the Masses. We're talking to Enzo Salveggi. It's about, he's from the Heritage Liturgical, talking about the loss of beauty in the church and how we can get it back. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and, you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Justin's show and it's great." And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a
wow.
week. He goes to the mass in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome back to Church of the Masses. This is the time when I usually do a movie review or a television review, but having such a great conversation with my guest today that we decided to push into the third segment. And I also needed to give you all the correct web address for the Unplanned DVD Partner Affiliate Program. I talked about this in the first segment. So Unplanned, the people who produced it, are encouraging people to become partner affiliates to help get the DVD out to as wide an audience as possible. And so what they'll do is they'll send you a unique URL that you then people can order through, and then you get 25% of the income from the DVD goes right into your ministry, pro-life ministry or crisis pregnancy center or whatever. So the website is www.unplannedfilm.com/affiliates. unplannedfilm.com/affiliates. So go there, and we'll be talking more about that in subsequent weeks. So Enzo, we're talking about how the church, we kind of ended with there's signs of hope on the horizon, and you're telling me that the young priests have kind of had it. You know, it's interesting. One sign of hope I'm thinking in my own life is, you know, the church that we go to, my husband and I paid for a new altar rail to be put up. So imagine in my lifetime, there was an altar rail. It was taken down. And then the people of God got together and paid to get a new one to put it back up. So here you are in 2019. You know, we got a new altar rail up there. But I think that we're going to see that happening to a lot of these churches that were kind of what the term is renovated, you know, and a lot of the stuff was stripped out of them. But I think that these kind of blah things, they're not going to last. They're not going to last. And I'm not just talking simple. I'm talking blah, you know.
It's fortunately, it's unsustainable. Mm-hmm. It was never built to last. Mm-hmm. It was always built to be a sign of the now. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you know, to me, it's a parallel to really kind of our confidence in salvation. Mm-hmm. If you really believe God's, you know, got the power to save you, there's a certain energy that comes to you. And in a sense, I think that's a parallel to how we build. I don't believe what's coming out of your mouth, but I'll believe your building. Mm-hmm. And so I think that speaks to that speaks to calling people to that hope. You know, one of the things that when I talk about even vestments, for example, which are so important in the liturgy and the church space too. What we're being called to do in the liturgical act is go to Calvary. Calvary is not a pretty and easy place. Mm-hmm. You know, beauty is not there to cover things up. Beauty is not there to be an aesthetic fetish. Mm-hmm. And rightly, that should be something that's condemned. Beauty as a fetish is effeminate and it's weird. Mm-hmm. Okay, but beauty as the thing that comforts you and allows you to be comforted and allows you to want to do the difficult thing, which is really death to self, right? To go to Calvary, it's beauty. And it, God in his providence and the way that the world and our nature is built, it's that beauty that allows us to want to go there. He doesn't force us to go there. But it's through beauty that we are enticed and attracted and comforted as we willfully engage in the difficult thing. So liturgical art and sacred art is and must be tied to that understanding of what the liturgy is and what and why the place is holy. Mm-hmm. So more and more, I think that there's an awakening, and even as the, you know, these horrifying scandals are, you know, at last coming up and into, you know, into public discussion. Mm-hmm. While there's this destruction and crumbling in that regard, mm-hmm. there is, as a parallel, there's really an awakening and a finding anew of the things that we had lost.
No, it's so true. I know that the other mass that my husband and I go to out here is the 1 o'clock St. Therese in Alhambra, the Latin Mass. And I was just struck, we were there this past weekend, and I was so struck how, we're going to say 80% of the people there, and the church is really got a good crowd of people. It's as full as any Mass, and maybe more so. And yet they're not gray hairs. These are young families, for the most part, young families. And there are some gray hairs, but for the most part, it's young families. And it really strikes me, the young people have kind of had it, you know. And it's like, why should they, you know, I mean, I think the line in the church for so many decades now has been, you know, in order to attract the young people, we have to be like the world. And so we throw at them, you know, kind of music that's like what they hear on the radio or whatever. But they have the world, you know, and
they have the world.
And the church can't do better than the world that, you know, but we can do what we do. Yeah.
My generation and the following one, Barbara, we are the survivors of abortion. We're the survivors of no-fault divorce. We're the survivors of a fatherless mm-hmm. culture, and on many levels. And there's one thing that young people, for what it's worth, and I hope this gets to some people who like to talk about how to attract the youth. Mm-hmm. You don't attract the youth by selling them something. They see right through that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the party can only last for so long. The young person today, I think, has an aptitude of really being able to know when they're being sold a bill of goods mm-hmm. and of sensing inauthenticity from a mile away. They don't want any part of it, but they will turn their eye towards something that is new and different. And the only thing that's different in their world is holiness mm-hmm. and authenticity. The sacred itself, when it is authentically presented to them, is that new thing. I was at a Mass, Barbara, recently. It happened to be a classical Roman Rite Mass, mm-hmm. You know, the Latin Mass, as it's called. Mm-hmm. And this 16-year-old kid came up to the priest that was standing around there after Mass, and he goes, "Father, I really like this new Mass that you're doing." I thought that was interesting because of,
it's new to him, right?
Yeah. It seems comical, but there's such an underlying truth there, was that this young man, for the first time in his life, had seen something that was completely foreign to the dynamics of the world that he was brought up in.
You know, it reminds me of a quote by Chesterton, who said, "It's not the new things that fascinate; it's the old things." You know, and it's a kind of a really interesting thought there. You know, so there's hope. I think that another interesting thing I was thinking while you were talking, you know, when you talk about these awful church scandals that are, you know, these priest scandals that are so unthinkable for us, of how could they be? You know, getting ready for Mass and thinking these things and perpetrating these acts. And I think it probably was easier to do a lot of that stuff in a church that had stripped down, you know, like had taken away so much of the kind of mysterious kind of classic that you were entering into something. It wasn't about you. You were entering into something bigger than yourself. I think it's easier to forget, you know, who you are in the kind of modern church that did that. And so it's like, I think like there's just no innovation in the Latin Mass. You know, you don't need to be Jay Leno, and it's not about you, Father, you know,
Well, beyond even that, because, you know, there's many who've never even heard of what that Latin Mass is, or maybe never been. But, you know, one thing that I notice right now, Barbara, and if I may, is, you know, we hear about these things, and, you know, I hear about them not just from the news, but I hear it from them, you know, in confidence from some of my colleagues. And it's so shocking and heart-wrenching to understand that some of these things are happening. And by the way, how good priests are often treated by mm-hmm. by bad superiors. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, right now we have a tendency, we're going, and you'll see it, is to, well, you know, the priest had too much power, or the priestess, or the priest that, and the idea that we push down the priesthood as if it's just another job. And I think right now, the most important thing that Catholics can do, especially in light of these scandals, and especially as they're going to get, we're going to find out some things that are so much worse than we've ever imagined were possible. But in especially in the face of that, is to lift up the priesthood. The priest is the honor of our people. The priesthood is what is special. It is not an unspecial thing. It is the most special thing. Now is the time, yes, yes, to put the priest on the pedestal that truly belongs to him, and then to support him in his call of holiness. It's about holiness. It's about the truths of the faith that will express itself through the arts, through the culture. But the priesthood right now is under attack, and it doesn't mean that you let bad people go free. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. But the sacramental truth mm-hmm. of what the priesthood is and what the priest is and represents, that's what we have to uphold right now. And that is a direct link to what the work is in sacred art.
Sure. So we're down to our last couple of minutes here, Enzo, and that beautiful thought there. But just to kind of encapsulate what we've said, what's the new Renaissance in the church going to look like? It's going to look like the old Renaissance?
I think it's uncharted territory. I think the modern world presents a culture that isn't immediately going to allow us to do what was done, quote unquote, before, because what was done before was literally hundreds, if not thousands of years of buildup and organic continuity and rebuilding
And we've lost the artists. We don't have a lot of, like, the most talented artists they don't believe anymore.
It's the culture of art and the culture of taste. But I think also what the truth that needs most affirming is. And so I think that there is right now, we're in this period of discovery. Architecture as a whole has lost its canons mm-hmm. and has lost its ability to speak to the other arts in a unified language. So as that gets rebuilt, as the sculptor, as the painter, as the man who makes the vessels, and the architect are able to speak the same language and understand the same things. And by the way, here is where the message of Trent to the arts is actually really important, that it is all one thing. There's not one that's more important than the others. The person who stitches the galloon on the vestment is as important as the architect. Mm. And so in that sense, as that culture, if we are able to grow it again, then I think we're going to see something really, really special. But until then, it's a lot of dissociated pieces that have to find each other and come together and speak in one, in one tongue.
It's so interesting because Cardinal George said to me years ago that that the first Renaissance came out of an entire ecclesial, societal, and academic or educational training, structures that had been dismantled. And that we weren't going to see a return to beauty in the church until those things have been put back together. So my guest today has been Enzo Salveggi. Thank you so much, Enzo, for being with us. We're probably going to have you on again. This is a great show. This is Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. Oh my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole church, grant it love and the light of thy spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great high priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin most powerful radio. Sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.